How many times have you done step one? Did you know it's intended to be repeated and renewed on a regular basis? We'll visit the basics of step one today in recovery support with Kevin Bergen. This is Recovery Support, and I'm Kevin Bergen, licensed psychotherapist. The show's purpose is to support those in recovery of any kind, and it focuses on recovery from porn addiction, sexual acting out, or any sexually compulsive behavior. My aim is to support your recovery with education, inspiration, and motivation. Welcome today to Recovery Support. We're going to revisit some basics today, and this is intended for everybody listening. Now, I realize those people listening to this podcast, some have finished and gone through all of the 12 steps. Some are just trying to figure out if this applies to them and if they are a sexaholic. Some are working through the 12 steps. Some are just attending meetings and don't even have a sponsor yet. Everybody's in a different place, and this step one applies to every one of you. We're going to start, as we usually do today, by reading from the White Book. The White Book is the text for Sexaholics Anonymous, and it's very comparable to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that is used in AA meetings. On page 203, we find the problem. Many of us felt inadequate, unworthy, alone, and afraid. Our insides never matched what we saw on the outsides of others. Early on, we came to feel disconnected from parents, from peers, from ourselves. We tuned out with fantasy and masturbation. We plugged in by drinking in the pictures, the images, and pursuing the objects of our fantasies. We lusted and wanted to be lusted after. We became true addicts. Sex with self, promiscuity, adultery, dependency relationships, and more fantasy. We got it through the eyes. We bought it. We sold it. We traded it. We gave it away. We were addicted to the intrigue, the tease, the forbidden. The only way we knew to be free of it was to do it. "Please connect with me and make me whole," we cried with outstretched arms. Lusting after the big fix, we gave away our power to others. This produced guilt, self-hatred, remorse, emptiness, and pain, and we were driven ever inward, away from reality, away from love, lost inside ourselves. Our habit made true intimacy impossible. We could never know real union with another because we were addicted to the unreal. We went for the chemistry, the connection that had the magic, because it bypassed intimacy and true union. Fantasy corrupted the real. Lust killed love. First addicts, then love cripples. We took from others to fill up what was lacking in ourselves. Conning ourselves time and again that the next one would save us, we were really losing our lives. I really like the way the White Book is worded, using we. If you're just trying to figure out if this whole thing applies to you, if you are wondering if you're really an addict, then listen to the words of others as they use the we pronoun and see if it fits for you. Some things will fit, some things won't. Take what fits for you, leave the rest. We're going to read again from the White Book today, specifically about step one, and we're going to start on page 83. We admitted that we were powerless over lust, that our lives had become unmanageable. "I give up." It may have come with a loud cry or in a moment of quiet resignation, but the time came when we knew the jig was up. We had been arrested, stopped in our tracks, but we had done it to ourselves. If surrender came only from without, it never took. When we surrendered out of our own enlightened self-interest, it became the magic key that opened the prison door and set us free. Arrest and surrender in order to be set free. What a paradox. But it was our self-proclaimed freedom that had been killing us, and we began to see that without limits, we would destroy ourselves. But we were powerless to limit ourselves, and the more we indulged, the more unmanageable our lives became. Each lustful act or fantasy became another powerful ray penetrating the nucleus of our psyches and loosened the forces that held us together. Thus, in time, we came to the growing realization that we were losing control. It was to this truth that we surrendered, the truth about ourselves. Something's wrong with me, and I can't fix it. Awareness of the unmanageability of our lives was not apparent to us at first. But as we recovered from shock and spiritual blindness, we began to see how we were unable to function without lust. Awareness of the unmanageability of our lives was not apparent to us at first, but as we recovered from shock and spiritual blindness, we began to see how we were unable to function without lust, negative attitudes, and dependencies holding our lives together. Reaching the point of utter despair did not always come right away. It came to some of us only after we had been in the fellowship for a while. The full effect of step one seems to come gradually or in stages with the unfolding realization of our unsoundness. It is out of this inner honesty with ourselves that the feelings of hope and forgiveness flow. We were free to see and admit what we really were inside because we were finally free from having to act out what we were. How long and how cleverly we had defended our right to wrong ourselves and others, and how long we denied there was any wrong at all. But every wrong attitude and act stored up its own punishment against us from within, until finally the cumulative weight of our wrongs brought us to our knees. The third option. Before finally giving up, we had tried one or the other of two options. On the one hand, we expressed our obsession by acting it out. On the other hand, we tried suppressing it by drinking, drugging, eating, or by fighting it with white-knuckle willpower. And with what a show of promises and resolutions, many of us switched from acting out to suppression, back and forth. Neither option brought us the peace we sought so desperately. Expressing the obsession made it progress relentlessly on and on, and suppressing it only made the pressure build inside until something had to give. Both options made it worse. We were between a rock and a hard place. We never knew there was another option. Surrender. What a beautiful, liberating word it has become to those of us who do it. Surrender is letting go. The story is related in 12-step program circles of how monkeys were caught in the wild. It is actually a native folktale. Fruit as bait is placed in a cage with an opening only large enough to allow the monkey's open hand to enter. Once the monkey's hand grasps the fruit, his fist becomes too large and his hand is trapped inside. Rather than letting go of the fruit so he can withdraw his hand and get free, the monkey clenches his fist all the harder as he tries to have the fruit and freedom too. Our story. There's another story of the man who fell off a cliff in the dark and on the way down grasped a branch and hung on for dear life. Weakening, he finally cried out to heaven, "Please help me." And the answer came, "Let go." "But if I let go, I'll die," the man replied. "Let go," was all he heard. When finally he could hold on no longer, he did let go, knowing it was the horrible end. To his great surprise, the ground was only a foot below him. As long as we either cling to it or tried to fight it into submission, our habit fought back. And being more powerful than we, it always won. Only when we let go does the release come, as though God mercifully raises the very earth itself to meet us. Merely knowing and admitting we were powerless over lust, or whatever form our acting out took, didn't help until we gave up our right to do it and let it go. There was no mistaking this change of heart when it happened. We knew it, and those about us knew it. There was no faking surrender. And thank God, when we did give up and stop fighting, He was always there, waiting with open arms. Instead of killing us as we had feared, surrender killed the compulsion. Experience has shown us that the public aspect of surrender is crucial. It seems surrender is never complete until it's brought out in the open, into the company of others. This is the great test that separates wishers and whiners from doers. As one member said, "It's as though I was not really willing to put it down until I brought it out before others who were putting theirs down. Making others a part of my surrender helped me be honest with it." What is this public aspect of surrender? First, it's being able to acknowledge what we are. It takes some of us weeks or months of coming to meetings before we can realize it at depth and say from the inside, "I am a sexaholic." Others seem to freely acknowledge this immediately. Next, we start talking honestly about ourselves. First, what we've done and thought in the lust, sex, and relationship area. Then gradually, as more is revealed, we talk about our other defects. Typically, these are revealed progressively over time. It's as though we can't see the full extent of the power our sexaholism has over us without first making a start at sharing it in the fellowship. Then we begin to see and disclose more as we become part of the progressive honesty and self-disclosure of others. A trust begins to develop as we see that nothing is being held against us and that others are just like we are, or worse off. Trust deepens as we become mutually vulnerable by leading with our weaknesses. Leading with our weaknesses becomes the point of identification and union with each other, and it seems someone's self-disclosure has to start it off. Someone takes the risk because he or she has to. The pain is so bad. This helps us pull away the curtain concealing the truth of our own lives and encourages our own self-disclosure. The honesty of one encourages the honesty of others, as though we'd all been waiting for just such a fellowship where we could be on the outside what we really were on the inside all along. All this takes time. We didn't get here in a day. But before we know it, there's a shared honesty and mutual vulnerability. This is the breakthrough entrance into the program that will open the way into the healing power of the steps. And this is why there must be those in our meetings who are hurting or who have hurt badly enough to break through into true honesty and surrender. This lends power to the meeting, and the spiritual unity and effectiveness of the group are enhanced. With an in-depth realization of what we really are and a willingness to reveal the truth about ourselves to other members, we can connect with recovery. When we begin telling it like it really is and was from the inside out, we become part of. The spiritual connection begins here by first disconnecting from what we did, and we disconnect from it by sending it away from us as we tell it. This is the point of breakthrough. The essence of effective sharing is that we want to be done with our sexual and other wrongs and are sending them away. Mere catharsis or even honest self-disclosure misses the mark if that's all it is. The aim is to bring our diseased attitudes and misdeeds to the light of others and God and to be done with them. When it comes from such an attitude, sharing becomes a liberating and life-giving experience. This is why telling all is not taking the first step. Such confession can be anything from boastful replay to anguished dumping or intellectual analysis. And even then, it's not really all, and often is only surface material. In truth, we don't take the first step. it takes us. It overtakes us. And if it hasn't yet, hopefully it will. The sickness and punishment sexaholism produces inside us keep pounding us until we're ready to give up, let go, and know we are powerless over lust. Our lives had become unmanageable. For those who enter recovery through this program, the realization of powerlessness becomes coupled with growing awareness of personal unmanageability, the fact that something is out of kilter at the core of the self. For it is our very self that has turned from life. If we are content with ourselves, simply minus the compulsion, there can be no recovery. Recovery is more than mere sobriety. Deep inside, we always knew there were other things wrong with us, and it turns out our addictions were really trying to keep us from facing them. This is why, once the initial surrender of steps 1, 2, and 3 is made, steps 4 through 10 deal with exposing, confessing, and righting our wrongs. In sobriety, we quickly learn that we are just as powerless over other defects that begin to surface, resentment, for example, as we ever were over lust, sex, and dependency. The fact that these other problems aren't necessarily as obvious as lust can seduce us into the notion we're really okay. We can go for stretches of time without acting on them, but when things go wrong, watch out. They burst forth with a fearsome vengeance and fury. Bad feelings boil up as if out of nowhere, feelings that are against others, that isolate us and force us back into the prison house of the self. We'd rather believe such outbursts are simply results of what others are doing to us, unwilling to see that we think and act badly because there's something wrong inside us, as though bitter waters can spring up from a pure well. What great relief to finally come to the place where we can say not only I'm powerless over lust, but I'm powerless over me. It's okay to be absolutely powerless over self. This is where we join the human race. And best of all, just as the admission of powerlessness over lust is the key to our sexual sobriety, so the admission of powerlessness over our defects is the key to our emotional sobriety. Victory through powerlessness by the grace of God. What a glorious, liberating discovery. This is the point at which our self-honesty begins to grow, where recovery begins. But thank God, our defects are revealed to us progressively. In the fellowship of identification, acceptance, and forgiveness, we are able to bear the realization without destroying ourselves or resorting to one of our drugs to escape. Our God is patient and loving and kind with us, as we must learn to be with ourselves and others. The program calls those who are tired and weighed down with the burden of self, those who want to be rid of the load but can't. It calls those who are trapped in the prison of self but know no way out, a broken and contrite spirit. The spirit of the first step is the key that opens the door and sets us free. That concludes our reading out of the White Book today. And I want to comment on a couple things that the first step talks about. Do you know if you're a sexaholic yet? Do you doubt that you are? Are you only listening to this or going to meetings or doing any of these things because your clergy told you to, or because your wife told you to? I was talking with a client the other day, and he is not convinced that he is an addict. He is fighting this tooth and nail, and he says he wants to stop. He is sincere. He's sincere because he's not denying the fact that he has some big problems with this whole idea of sexual addiction. He doesn't want to be an addict. No. He wants to be able to just take care of a problem and move on. He's got a notion in his head of what addiction looks like, what a sexaholic is, and he certainly doesn't want to be that. He doesn't want to admit that he's anything like that. Part of that is because he has a misconception of what a sexaholic is. Another client, a couple years ago, went to a Sexaholics Anonymous retreat. He said upon returning that one of the things that struck him was when he first got there, he looked around as people were having dinner and socializing and getting to know each other and just kind of hanging out. And as he looked around, he realized, these are actually a bunch of normal-looking people. See, he had this idea in his head that you can tell a sexaholic just by looking at him. No. Everybody is different, and everybody's the same. Everybody has their own things that they're dealing with, and you don't have an idea in your head of what a sexaholic looks like because there is no one stereotype. This first client that was really struggling with the idea of being a sexaholic, he said several times he actually wants to stop his behavior. But he doesn't want to stop the behavior because it's quite enjoyable. But it doesn't match his values. It's getting in the way of forming a good quality relationship with a woman. And so I told him, if you act as if you want to stop, in other words, you take the steps to achieve a period of sobriety, you do things like attend meetings, you continue in your therapy, you continue to call out to other people and ask for support, your desire to stop the behavior will grow. You don't have to have a real desire to stop before you stop, because you can cultivate that and you can make it something real in your life. We're going to continue the next episode of Recovery Support with step one. There's a lot of material here, and it's going to be something that's going to be helpful. And I want to give you the full impact of step one. So we will continue with this idea of step one in next week's podcast. If you don't know that you're a sexaholic, if you haven't grasped the first step, it may take time, and that's okay. Let yourself grow with it. We're going to close today by reading The Solution on page 204 of the White Book. We saw that our problem was threefold: physical, emotional, and spiritual. Healing had to come about in all three. The crucial change in attitude began when we admitted we were powerless, that our habit had us whipped. We came to meetings and withdrew from our habit. For some, this meant no sex with themselves or others, including not getting into relationships. For others, it also meant drying out and not having sex with the spouse for a time to recover from lust. We discovered that we could stop, that not feeding the hunger didn't kill us, that sex was indeed optional. There was hope for freedom, and we began to feel alive. Encouraged to continue, we turned more and more away from our isolating obsession with sex and self and turned to God and others. All this was scary. We couldn't see the path ahead, except that others had gone that way before. Each new step of surrender felt it would be off the edge into oblivion, but we took it. And instead of killing us, surrender was killing the obsession. We had stepped into the light, into a whole new way of life. The fellowship gave us monitoring and support to keep us from being overwhelmed, a safe haven where we could finally face ourselves. Instead of covering our feelings with compulsive sex, we began exposing the roots of our spiritual emptiness and hunger, and the healing began. As we faced our defects, we became willing to change, surrendering them broke the power they had over us. We began to be more comfortable with ourselves and others for the first time without our drug. Forgiving all who had injured us, and without injuring others, we tried to right our own wrongs. At each amends, more of the dreadful load of guilt dropped from our shoulders until we could lift our heads, look the world in the eye, and stand free. We began practicing a positive sobriety, taking the actions of love to improve our relations with others. We were learning how to give, and the measure we gave was the measure we got back. We were finding what none of the substitutes had ever supplied. We were making the real connection. We were home. And now I'm going to offer the third step prayer found on page 63 of Alcoholics Anonymous. Those of you that know this, please join me. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of my bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Keep those emails coming. I like to hear how this podcast is working or not working for you. You can email me at kbrecoverysupport@gmail.com. In the spirit of the seventh tradition, I do accept contributions to cover expenses of this podcast. You can anonymously donate via PayPal through the link on the show notes page. For the show notes and references to different works that I read from and mention, you can go to recoverysupport.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. Thank you for being with me today. We will continue with more information on step one next week as we continue through our recovery support. Be well and have a sober day.